Welcome to season 2, episode 2 of What the
episode
Batch.
Episode 13.
I'm going to stick with that numbering. Especially because with 2 episodes a week, that numbering is way more convenient for me. But yeah, another 4 hours of Bachelor in Paradise to recap.
Sorry.
I'll take your apology. because
is that bad?
It's going to be a rough season.
Oh no.
They, in the past, had done something where it was essentially 3 hours of content a week for Paradise, and then 1 hour of after Paradise. They made it very clear they were not going to do that this year because of the contracted timeline, because of the fact that they'd pushed it a week. It was going to be 4 hours of Paradise a week. And that was a lie.
Oh, no.
Instead of getting 3 hours of Paradise content and an hour of After Paradise, which was fun. After Paradise was a joyous sort of after show. Last season, they did not include Chris Harrison. They had Sean Lowe, who's one of their more famous bachelors, and a comedian whose name I don't remember because she wasn't that funny, host. And it was amusing. You'd had the contestants actually live in studio.
Still on the show?
So the show, no, the show's taped. The show is done taping.
Oh, yeah.
So they'd be live in studio here in LA, and they'd fly certain ones out every week depending on whose storyline got most prominently featured.
Okay.
And they would chat, and it was, they'd also make sure that they'd also make sure to have certain guests. So, like, James Gunn came and was a guest 1 week.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that.
Because he's a huge fan of the show, like, a huge super fan. And he came on and told the twins that he wanted to have them in Guardians of the Galaxy 2, which I don't think actually came to fruition, although I was looking for it, but...
Maybe they're on the cutting room floor.
Yeah. They also had some other guests. I mean, they had some people from Scandal, like Katie Lowe's came on with her husband, who was actually more of a fan than she was, and she was like, I don't really want to go on After Paradise, and he was like, no, they've invited you, because you're on Scandal, and I love this show, so we're going. And that played out, and it was funny. Give me back After Paradise, because instead of After Paradise, what we've been saddled with is an hour a week during which Chris Harrison sits down for fireside-esque chats that reiterate the fact that nothing really happened with the scandal, and we shouldn't think anything happened with the scandal, but lives were potentially ruined by the scandal in which nothing happened.
I feel like the scandal is something you probably shouldn't be alluding to or bringing up constantly.
Correct. Especially, and I mean, I said this last week, if you want to preserve the illusion or to hype up the reality that Paradise is supposed to be fun and light, and it's the alternative to The Bachelor and Bachelorette because it's on a beach and they can have sex and it's kind of low stakes because if they don't get engaged, it's fine, but if they do, that's wonderful, and maybe it results in a Jade and Tanner or an Evan and Carly. And I don't want to have, it's like saying to me, hey, do you want steak, but we're also going to like throw honey on it. I don't want honey on my steak.
What a terrible sounding thing.
Yeah. So if Paradise is the steak, this hour of just saccharine bullshit at the end of it is the honey I did not ask for. And last week, okay, fine. It was 45 minutes of Evan and Carly's wedding. That didn't bring down anything. What brought it down was the necessary, if ill-edited, fireside chat that was in the past, where Chris was saying to them, these are the new rules, you can't drink more than 2 drinks an hour, nothing bad happened, let's all take a vote, as if they were going to vote no.
Right.
But this week was quite literally 2 hours on Monday, an hour on Tuesday, that just stopped. It stopped exactly at the hour mark. They go to commercial, they come back, and it's Chris Harrison in studio, taped 2.5 weeks ago, with DeMario, with some of the other cast members, and with Evan and Carly, and for an hour we just have Chris interviewing people in the hot seat, like Men Tell All or Women Tell All.
This feels very awkward and off-putting.
Yeah, I mean, it's the easiest to work back from that, because there's really very little I want to recap about it, except to say that it was a waste of my fucking time. And I don't really want to watch the last hour of next week's 4 hours, but I will, if only because
this told me about it.
Well, no. No, because it's Corinne. And so this week we get it's DeMario for half an hour, and he's already done a 2-hour tell-all with E! News, and he's done numerous other interviews, and he was on a podcast like yesterday talking about the Corinne thing, talking about Paradise, and shitting on Rachel.
Gross.
And saying that he knew full well, and every other guy there knew, that Rachel didn't like black men. And she and she did nothing to hide it, so he knew he had no future on the show. And if you had asked him night one, he could have told you that the final three would have been Brian, Dean, Peter. So the fact that Eric made it to the final three is shocking to him, and probably only because they needed a token black guy. Like, when DeMario's out there and being that present and that willing to do interviews, a tell-all with Chris Harrison, it doesn't mean shit. Like, it's like, okay, he's crying, and I empathize with him on the level that his name got dragged through the mud. He seems like a totally sort of affable, if too brutally honest, man who...
He sounds terrible from what you just said and the shit he's saying. Like, he needs to have all the seats.
I mean, I buy, and I said this on the very first podcast that we did, I buy that Rachel didn't really have interest in any of all of the black men that were on the season of The Bachelorette, which is fine. That's her entitlement as The Bachelorette and a woman of taste. Like, she, if that's what her preference is, that's what her preference is. She also went on Nick's season, so we knew that Nick was somebody that she was physically interested in. I don't really have issue with DeMario raising those questions. On paper, if DeMario's name hadn't already been fucked over as bad as it was, like, if Eric was to raise those questions and say the exact same thing, I think I wouldn't bat an eyelash at it. You know, if he said, look, I think I made it to the final three because she wanted a token black guy, he wouldn't say that because he is still theoretically in the running to be the Bachelor, so it doesn't behoove him to speak out that way. DeMario knows he's got no future with this franchise. He's got no future with these producers. So why not be unbridled and say what you're thinking? The answer to that is that you can't really go on this weird hour-long thing at the end of, you know, Paradise this week to save face and cry and then be on a podcast like 2 days later, which actually drops 2 days before, where you say all these hot takes. And in his E! Interview that he did, the most interesting section, which he kind of had to back away from tonight because he's back on ABC again, was that when he was in the dressing room getting ready for the rose ceremony before everything got shut down, the producer came to him and he's like, I knew in that moment I was about to be fucked over by ABC for a second time in like 4 months.
What was the first time?
When they pulled his not real girlfriend, who had like been casually sleeping with, to air him out on national television.
Right.
And he was like, and in that moment I was like, why did I even come back? Like, I should have known that if that was the edit they were going to give me the first time, that they were going to screw me over again. And he had to back away from that tonight because you can't air ABC out on ABC. They're not going to show that, even if he had said it in front of a live studio audience. So it was much more, like, apologetic and reserved, and there were some tears. And, again, I'm not here to hate on DeMario. I think he got the short straw in a lot of ways. But it does make me interested to see what Corinne's going to say next week, because she's never once pointed a finger at him, even when she had lawyered up. Like, his name never came out of her mouth. So I don't know what she's really going to take a half hour or an hour to say next week beyond, I just thought, like, lawyering up was the right thing to do and maybe there was money to be made here. But she can't say that because then she looks terrible. So, like, what is her half hour going to be? It's probably, if I had to guess, going to be a lot of discussion about how, like, slut-shaming occurred, because they asked DeMario about the slut-shaming and they asked Raven and some of the other girls who were sitting down with Chris at the beginning of the hour to also address that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't need that. Like, I don't need Raven and Jasmine weighing in. I don't need the Raven and Jasmine weighing in on whether Corinne was slut-shamed or not. I don't think at any point, yes, people were slut-shaming her. Yes, people were accusing DeMario of rape, but both of those things have been proven factually inaccurate at this point. Why are we spending hours upon hours harping on it? And hours, like, upon hours after the footage that's meant to be, like, sexy and romantic. There's nothing more of, like, a boner killer than to go from, like, two people frolicking on the beach and, like, having sex to Chris Harrison in a studio sitting down to have honest conversations with shocked, like, soccer moms in the audience. Ugh. Just, like, gasping and shrieking.
Well, just gross and exploitative.
Yeah, it's... What it comes down to is we want to fill 4 hours a week and we don't have 4 hours a week to fill. So again, bring back After Paradise. The Evan and Carly section of this week is them revealing that they are pregnant and they're going to be having a kid, which was already in the news. It's not even, again, it's not an exclusive.
Right, I think you told me a while ago.
Yeah, I definitely mentioned it last week on this podcast. And this week, like, I mean, today's Tuesday, so maybe even last week, it might have been Friday, or it might have been over the weekend, People Magazine had the exclusive that they were having a girl. So then you see them on This Tonight, which was not live, it was pre-taped, and then they have, you know, a sonogram taking place, and...
Wait, what?
They had an actual, like, technician come in and do the sonogram of Carly's belly. And she's like, oh, we can't tell if it's a boy or a girl. I'm like, well, People Magazine can tell you that. They did over the weekend, you know?
This is kind of mind-boggling. Okay. Sure, have your sonogram for reality TV.
So it's like, do it live. Do it live or don't do it.
Right. Like, it doesn't make sense to wait on that.
Yeah, they also had, like, a very small package of Jade and Tanner talking about their pregnancy, and also over the weekend, Jade gave birth. So that's dated, too, because it's like, oh, wow. Oh, because Jade's talking about, like, oh, we've got another month to go, and Chris is like, we wished them the best at the end of this pregnancy. I'm like, yeah, well, the pregnancy's over.
Arrived.
They had a beautiful baby girl over the weekend. Her name's Emerson. Like, this is really stupid, because even the parts that I kind of am enjoying, I don't really enjoy because I already know them. Like, I already know all right. of this. It's fair knowledge. And I guess if you don't follow anything and if you don't read headlines, but the fact that my mom was already saying to me, like, oh, it's like I saw Jade and Tanner's baby when I, like, logged into the internet today over the weekend. The average person probably has seen it, so it's going to be dated to them too.
Yep. It's moving faster than they can keep up.
So, yeah, I mean, I have a feeling it's going to be a full season's worth of this, and I really don't know where they'll go after Corinne next week. I don't know how you fill that fourth hour the week after that.
If by they being more gross and exploitative?
I hope not. Now, in terms of the actual things that happened in Mexico this
sure.
week.
Tell me about a bunch of people whose names I'm not going to recognize or remember.
Well, yes. For this reason, I've resigned myself to that there's no reason to take notes. Because I could take notes and, like, really run through the intricacies of everything that happens over 3 hours. But it's just going to be a lot of, like, wait, who are we talking about?
Okay.
So again, like I did last week, it's probably best to just run through the specific storylines that we are editing around. And then you'll only have to ask me, wait, who are these people at the top of that story?
Sure.
And then we move on to the next one. The main story of Paradise this week is Dean.
Deanie baby.
Yes. And Dean's descent into fuckboy madness.
So there are two episodes we're talking about.
Yes.
This
is the first 2 hours. Dean pretty much has no appearance in the hour that aired tonight before the Chris Harrison madness. But last night was all Dean, all the time.
Okay.
It was almost 2 full hours of just Dean.
Just Dean.
But, actually, you know what? For chronological purposes, I'll step back for a moment. Before we deal with Dean's craziness, there's something important that happens, which is a rose ceremony.
Oh, hey!
But before a rose ceremony happens, another full hour of content. So I last...
So the halfway point is a rose ceremony?
Yes.
So you're not getting another rose ceremony in this
episode. Oh, there was one rose ceremony this week.
Okay.
Last week we had 4 hours of content, 0 rose ceremonies. This week, 4 hours of content, 1 rose ceremony.
And maybe it's exponential. We'll find out.
I mean, part of me wants to be like, all right, so maybe when we stop doing these weird in studio interviews, we'll be having two a week, but also I don't want to hold out hope for that. The full hour that aired last night, so Monday night from 8 to 9, almost nothing happens. I just sat there.
For 2 hours?
Well, no, for the first hour, 8 to 9.
Oh.
The one notable thing is Adam.
Give me more.
He had the doll, Adam Jr.
The ventriloquist doll? That was really creepy from this last season that we just...
Yeah, so The Bachelorette. And he also was the guy who finished fifth just outside of hometowns, who they had do the one-on-one interview with Mentel All and then cut it. So even after giving him that moment in the sun of, like, you were important and Rachel loved you...
Yanked it right away.
Yes. Adam arrives in paradise looking for love. And all of the men are very upset because they know a rose ceremony is right around the corner. And the numbers have just gotten worse in this sausage fest.
Oh, no. Why?
Well, there's only so many female roses to go around. The girls have the roses. They're handing them out. So somebody, if they're going to give Adam one, means that that's another guy that was already there who's not going to get one. And Adam comes to paradise with a date card, as all new entries do. And with his date card, he opts to take Raven out.
Your fave.
Yes. Well, he talks to Christina and he talks to Raven, and Christina is still very set on Dean.
Who's Christina?
Christina is the Russian princess.
Oh, right.
She's very set on Dean, and she kind of alludes to Adam that she would go on the date with him, but her heart is elsewhere. Whereas Raven is like, let's go on a date. And Raven then reveals via an ITM that during the shutdown of production, she went to visit Dallas and met Adam in Dallas and spent some time with him there, so she was really hoping that he would show up.
Okay.
This is noteworthy in so much as the 10 days to 14 days, or whatever it was, that they were shut down have royally fucked up this season of Paradise.
Okay.
I know that some of the other people who do recaps of this think it's the greatest thing in the world and that maybe they should continue doing this in the future. Like, next season, have them all show up in Paradise, then turn off the cameras for, like, a week and let them foster these relationships and then come back. I hate this idea. I also hate what it's actually done, because you have this weird not-real love triangle that they were trying to build between Raven, Robbie, and Ben. Robbie and Raven were never a thing. They were a thing in Robbie's head because he knows that she's the lead of this show and he wants desperately to be the Ken to her Barbie. But
I don't know who these two people are.
Yes. Well, there's... And Ben is forgettable, except that if you watch it, you would see what a savage edit that he's gotten. Because every year they decide they're going to play a practical joke on someone in Paradise by giving them the crazy person edit, if you will.
Is that a practical joke?
Well, it's never like a psychotic crazy edit. In Ben's case, they've decided to show only things in which he talks about his dog. So it now appears as though the only thing that Ben discusses in conversations with anyone
is his dog. Wait, it sounds like a friend of yours.
Yes, it does. I'm not going to touch that. But if you know how editing works, you're watching this and you have to kind of sympathize with him, because you know he's sitting at home like, not only did you guys pull one over on me, you really made me look terrible. There's a whole conversation last week, which I think I mentioned, where he's meeting Raven for the first time, and they made it seem like the only thing that he talked about was the dog, to the point where Raven didn't want to talk to him anymore and just got up and walked away.
Oh, that's rough.
And then during the rose ceremony last week, which then didn't end up happening, they show him in an ITM that's like, if I'm not going to get a rose, I just want to go home to my dog.
Oh.
So they really are, like, hyping this up. So the weird not-love triangle between Raven, Benzie, and Robbie did need to be shaken up. But when you have Raven saying, I spent time with Adam in Dallas during the break, I'm really happy he's here. One, it feels entirely concocted that Adam's walking in right in this moment.
Of course.
And two, it deflates any of the tension of their bullshit love triangle that they spent all of the edit on last week trying to build. Like, it's
that's weird.
It's a dumb triangle, and it doesn't make sense, but, like, have her pick one of the two of them in a rose ceremony, and then have Adam show up, so that you have, like, Ben resting on his laurels and feeling confident that he's built a real relationship, and there's at least a rose to prove that. Because instead, they spend an hour of Ben feeling, like, very bullish, and if her and Adam hit it off on this date, then I gotta do something when she gets back, because I can't go back to my dog empty-handed, you know, without a new dog mother for her. And Robbie kind of just drifts off into the goodnight, because there's nothing left for him to do in that storyline anymore. On top of all of this, and I said it last week, but the dates are so cheap. They're so cheap. I mean, they went to Scandinavia, they went all over, they went to Spain, to wine country on Rachel's season.
Ah, yes, I remember.
You know, Nick was country hopping on his year. Like, the other franchise shows go globetrotting. And even when they go domestically somewhere, if they're going to go within the United States, they have a good time with it. You know, the one time that it's usually kind of boring is where they go to the hometown of whoever the bachelor or the bachelorette is, because they're not from particularly exciting hometowns, and you have to kind of stretch that out. So with Nick, it's like, let's go to Madison, Wisconsin, and have all these girls revel at how nothing happens in Madison, Wisconsin. Paradise should be, like, sexy dates, or it should be funny dates, or it should be sexy, funny dates.
Okay, yeah.
And they should be creative and lively, and you should be trying to make the most of the scenery. And Raven and Adam's date doesn't even get shown.
What? What's the point?
It gets shown in so much as we see them sit down at a cafe and order margaritas and cheers, and that's all we see. Apparently they went salsa dancing. We don't really see that.
Why wouldn't you show that? That sounds fun.
It's kind of fun, but also, like, again, salsa dancing is something that I can afford to do and can do here in LA. So salsa, like...
Sure. There's no specialty to it.
Yeah. There's nothing... There's no, you know, pizzazz. No fireworks. It also is problematic when you don't show it, because then later, right before the rose ceremony, when Benzie's shooting his shot and failing with Raven, and Adam comes in right behind him and goes, I just want to keep dancing with you. I'm like, when were you dancing? I didn't know you were dancing. I know you were dancing because I saw on social media that that's what the date was, but, like, these editors didn't show me that. The show didn't show me that. It's just a truly, truly bizarre decision. But after that gets cleared up, and it becomes fairly obvious that Raven was sitting there waiting for Adam and potentially hooked up with Adam in Dallas, although they skirt around that. It was like, oh, we spent time in Dallas, but what did you spend time doing? Like, like, were you guys having sex for 3 days in Dallas and then he shows up in Paradise? Because if that's the case, you already know who your rose is going to before you go on your bullshit salsa dancing date anyway. The rose ceremony is built to be this very climactic event because no one knows if they're safe other than Derek, who's getting Taylor's rose, because all they do is lay around and have sex. Like, they're so, like...
Sounds like a good life.
Yeah, they are pretty set. And other than that, who's going to get what rose?
How many go home?
4 guys went home last night.
Okay. So that was the overage?
Yeah. 12 guys, 8 women.
Oh, okay. It's quite the disparity.
Yeah. It's the most, I think, that there'll be in any one week. For next week's rose ceremony, I believe it will be 10 men, or 10 women, 8 men. Mm-hmm. So 2 women will go home.
Right.
But because it's the first week and they have all these people who have already moved in to begin with, the numbers are more exaggerated, and then Adam showing up made it even more of a disparity. There's no real losses from the elimination. Saint Nick, who I mocked last week for being the guy who got too drunk on night one,
okay,
goes home. You know, you're the guy that gets too drunk on night one, you're probably going home.
Right.
And if you get drunk on night one and then you come back from, like, a multiple week hiatus and you're kind of drunk again, you're almost
still drunk on new night one.
You're almost certainly going home. Iggy goes home because Iggy sucks. But before Iggy goes home, he makes a last-ditch effort to get a rose, which...
How does that go? I mean, obviously not well because he went home, but...
Well, he pulls Lacey aside.
Which one is...
The most whiny and forgettable of the eight women in the Paradise Hotel.
That's incredibly helpful for me.
She's the one who really...
Oh, was she the abused one?
No, she's the one that acted up at Women Tell All to get a slot on the show, but didn't do anything. She went home like the second episode of Nick's season and made no impression. Okay. She's just cannon fodder.
Okay.
But she has a rose this week, so she's got power for the first time in the history of, you know, her life in this franchise, and she also was the one woman who nobody forged any connection with, so the last, you know...
Oh, so she's all the last-ditch dudes. Yes. Like, hey, pick me, pick me.
Exactly. She just sits there and lets all of them one by one make an effort, and Iggy's effort is, hey, I know you're Jewish... I found this Jewish prayer I'm going to read you.
What?
And then we'll toast some wine.
What?
That's bad enough. Oh, but no. when the prayer began, Baruch Atah Elohai, I'm like, what do you mean you found this prayer? You found the prayer, Iggy. This isn't like a unique prayer that you've discovered after like going on an excavation.
I wrote it myself. Oh.
And then he kind of... You know, tries to get a kiss. He gets curbed. Whoa. He gets curbed.
Appropriately.
Nick talks, Saint Nick talks to her, but he doesn't really stand a chance. Like, I think he knew no one was going to give him the rose. Like, he was like, I'm going home. Diggy gets in there, and Diggy kisses her and basically says, look, this is your rose. You're going to do what you want with it. I hope you use it on me. But it's genuine enough that I'm like, all right, well, that's where that's going. Our other two men who were sort of on the chopping block, and both of whom did go home, one of them was Vinny, who... He was the...
Jersey Shore?
Yes.
Okay. Sounds like a Vinny.
He was the barber from JoJo season. He was also... He also is a DJ. He does a lot of things.
Sure.
But Vinny is great television. I also knew he was not long for this world because they had pretty much edited around him for 5 hours.
Oh, no narrative.
Yeah.
Narrative death.
So whereas last season he had, of Paradise, he had a large narrative and was fantastic, I think he probably knew, yeah, I'm out. And in his exit interview, he said, if Corinne was still here, I was getting her rose. She's not. I kind of knew I wasn't getting a rose. Like, it's been fun. But the real special guy is Alex, who...
Oh, boy.
Who... is about as thirsty leading up to this elimination as a man could be. And he doesn't just go to Lacey. He goes to every woman.
Wow.
All eight of them.
Bold?
One by one to, like, campaign.
Subtly?
No, not subtly. He goes to Christina even, is like, hey, so you're kind of mad at Dean. And she's like, yeah. He's like, so what if you gave me the rose instead?
Oh, wow.
And she's like, well, I'm mad at Dean, but, like, I still have feelings for Dean. He's like, yeah, but wouldn't it be great to get back at him by giving me that rose?
Oh, dude, is not charming.
Goes to Amanda and goes, you promised me your rose before we went on break, okay? So you owe that to me.
Oh, that's a great way to get a rose from somebody.
Goes to Danielle and says, you don't have love here, so you might as well give it to me. Like, he's shooting his shot with every woman. Eventually, he does wind up with Lacey and tries to be like, Lacey, I think there could be something here. And she's like, bro.
Nah, brah.
Like, do you think I didn't see you just go down the beach to every other woman? I'm not that desperate. Like, I'll go with the guy who kissed me and was sort of romantic. They feign for a moment that Robbie's future or life in Paradise is in jeopardy. It's the stupidest thing in the world because there was no way they were going to let a runner-up from a proper franchise show go home on night one.
The politics of this show is fascinating.
He's too much to the franchise, and he's got too many, you know, pieces of athletic clothing to sell on Instagram as a social influencer to go home, you know, fake night one, whatever we're calling this now, hour five night one. So Amanda... their malleable and sweet returning mother of two is pretty much told, you have to give your rose to Robbie, which then forces a very strange interaction between the two of them, because Robbie is friends with the emotionally abusive man who broke their engagement off.
Oh, that's disgusting.
And
he's terrible.
And he goes, let's just call our mutual friend. And Amanda's like, I wouldn't call him a friend at this point.
No, what a gross thing to say.
She's like, let's just call him Anonymous. And they have a whole conversation where Robbie goes, Anonymous is going to be mad at me for trying to date you. But he...
Oh, what is the difference between using Anonymous as an understood stand-in for the person and the person's name?
I have no idea, except to make Robbie seem even more ridiculous than he already does. Then his very sweaty, very clammy ass goes, I think this is the right time for a kiss.
Oh, no. Run away.
And I'm like, well, Amanda, please don't do this, because you've had very bad taste in the past on this show. And thankfully for once, she goes, oh, no, you're pretty sweaty right now. I don't think...
Thank you, Amanda. Bless.
I don't think we've worked towards a kiss, but I will give you my rose. And I'm like, yeah, because producers are in your ear being like, Amanda, you don't have love here. Give him your rose. Now, whether this develops into something else actually romantically moving forward, I wouldn't be shocked. Because again...
Oh, but no.
Again, Amanda doesn't have great taste. Oh. So she would be the one that goes, oh, the social influencer?
Oh, no.
Like, yeah, let's go. In the moments leading up to the elimination and the rose ceremony, Dean pulls Christina aside. And this brings us full circle to the... Now it's Dean until midnight. Like, the rest of the narrative is...
Oh, this is his downward spiral?
Yes. We get the Raven thing. This is how the week was more or less divided of the 3 hours. Hour one, Raven. Hour two, Dean. Hour three, Raven. Okay. So they're pretty hard and fast sticking with my... original prediction of Raven. It's just Raven and Dean's world, and we're living in it. The difference is Raven's getting a hero's edit,
right?
And Dean's getting
spiraling out of control.
Dean's getting the fall from grace edit.
Yeah.
The number of women I saw posting like broken heart emojis and gifs of people jumping out of ships and the Titanic sinking in reference to Dean.
It's not a good sign, Deanie Beanie.
It's just, but the thing is, it's basic fuckboy shit. Everything about what Dean is doing is basic fuckboy shit, but he's not doing it in a way... He's not creeping on the low. Like, you can creep on the low and be on national television, and, like, will know while watching you that you're creeping on the low, but the women won't know in the moment that you're creeping on the low.
Right, it's not overtly creepy.
He's, like, doing it so blatantly in front of the two of them that part of me goes, I think genuinely in your head, you're being above board. Like, you think by being so transparent with both of these women that you're on some fuckboy shit, that if neither of them stab you, like...
Which she should absolutely stab him.
Then you're good, because you put it out there for them and they didn't do anything with it. So, like, cool, you're the honest guy. Jack Stone, unlikely voice of reason.
Hey, future porn star Jack Stone.
Looks at what Dean's doing and goes, look, Dean's great if you want to date a guy and you're in middle school. But if you're a grown woman with a career, I don't really understand the appeal.
Hey, nobody got time for that.
He tells Christina directly before the rose ceremony, I think we need to pump the brakes. I know you have a rose and you have all the power and you'll give me the rose or you won't give me the rose. And that's really your prerogative. I just think we went and did this Kentucky trip for the 10 days during the break, which again speaks to the problem with the break.
Right.
Because if they had just hung out for 2 days on the beach or 3 days on the beach and then someone else showed up and Dean wanted to go on a date with that person, Christina would look crazy for being like, no, you can't do that.
Oh, right. For having the harder boundaries than if you had just met for... a day.
Yeah, but if you go on a vacation for 10 plus days and you go to the girl's hometown during that break and then you come back to Paradise and go, hey, now that we're back here, we should probably pump the brakes. It looks particularly bad because the assumption there, and again, it's sex is so important to Paradise and the narrative of Paradise. I assume if you guys spend 10 days off camera or 12 days off camera, and a lot of that traveling, you guys have had sex.
Sure.
So that changes the dynamic of a relationship. A couple hours on the beach drinking and hanging out versus, like, we probably went and had sex 10 nights in a row off camera. Now we're back, and as soon as we're back on camera, you're like, let's just ease off.
Pull back.
It feels like you stuck your hand in the honey jar, you tried it, and then you're like, but now there's other options here, and we're, you know, we're on paradise.
What a terrible metaphor and visual image. Thank you, Wes.
Yeah. I just want to keep bringing things back to honey. Yeah, this
apparently that's
this episode sponsored by honey.
Any particular reason why?
I just want to convince sponsors that I can find ways to weave in their product. To
organically incorporate it.
Give me a product sponsor, and I will find a way to organically weave it into my recaps of this show.
Oh, God.
Christina still gives Dean the rose after the, like, let's pump the brake conversation. And, of course, she's going to because, one, who else is she going to give a rose to? Saint Nick or Iggy? Like, these guys are lame. And, two, because this is Dean's world, and she's just living in it. So you know full well that some producer is in her ear saying, he's in love with you, he's falling in love with you, he's scared because he let his heart be opened by Rachel and she stomped on it. Like, you have to account for that. And she's like, yeah, that makes sense.
Oh, boy.
But those same producers are also fully aware of who the next girl in the door is. And so as soon as this rose ceremony is over and the sun has risen on the next day in paradise, enter Danielle Lombardo, a.k.a. D-Lo, a.k.a. the, like, Asian bombshell from Nick's season. And Danielle walks in the door and every single guy there just jaw drops.
Okay.
Kudos to the cameraman who got a sweeping shot.
I'm sure the cameraman was prepared and ready.
He got the sweeping shot of every guy just doing the, like, awooga. As D-Lo comes down the stairs. Even Derek, who's just spent the last 2 days having sex in a bungalow with Taylor and not talking to anybody else, is like, oh, I'm like a meerkat popping up. You know, like, popping up from the sex.
I sense a disturbance in the forest.
To take a look at D-Lo and be like, okay, she's entirely over made up, but she isn't an outfit that if the wind blew the wrong way would create a wardrobe malfunction pleasing both the men in paradise and those watching at home. Mm-hmm. And she knows right away what she's, you know, what she's looking for, and it's Dean. Now, okay. Now they don't...
D-Lo and Deanie baby.
They don't explicitly say that the two of them have spoken, but I don't think it's coincidental that Dean lives in Venice and Danielle lives in Hollywood. So...
Sure.
They've had ample time to, like, communicate with one another before the original show, before the shutdown, during the shutdown. And if I had to guess, Danielle was probably, like, number one on Dean's list that he had that they have to make before they come on the show of, like, who you're interested in dating while you're on the show.
Oh, I didn't realize that that was a thing.
They're asked to give it a top three of the women and men that they'd want to date or have sex with in Paradise.
From Bachelor Nation.
From Bachelor Nation, yeah. Because he starts running his hands through his hair and sweating and getting very like, oh my God, it's D-Lo. I'm with Christina, but she's here now. I don't know, but if she asked me on a date, I guess I'd have to go on the date. And... she goes, so, Dean, tell me, what are things with you and Christina? I don't want to step on toes. And Dean can defensively say, well, last night I did tell her that we should pump the brakes on these things. And he's not lying. Like, he did say that to Christina. She then gave him a rose, and they, like, made out, and she thought they were, like, on the path to good. But he gets to say, and then he gets to go back to Christina and say, look, I told Danielle that you and I were together, but we were kind of taking things slow, and Danielle wants me to go on the date with her. So Christina's like, well, fuck Danielle. Like, that's bullshit. Like, if you told her that we're together...
Right.
Now, in previous seasons, all of Christina's anger would have then been aimed at Danielle.
Okay.
Like, last year, it was like, don't take my man. Like, how dare you come in here? You know, and Christina even says in an ITM, like, Danielle knew that Dean and I were in Kentucky for 10 days. Like, we were texting, and I was telling her how great it was being with him.
Oh.
So, I'm sitting there going, well, yeah, Dean's kind of being a shithead, but Dean's also honoring what the show is, which is date around, meet some people, hang out, whatever. The 10-day break is what caused the problem here.
Up. Yeah.
But where is the girl code there? If you're, you know, if you're D-Lo and you're like, yeah, I was getting texts from Christina over the break about how wonderful everything was. I show up, she tells me don't go on a date with Dean, and then I'm like, yeah, I'm going to take Dean on a date.
Yeah, no, that's, that's not good.
And Christina doesn't aim any of her real anger towards D-Lo. There's, like, one flippant comment about how it's kind of bitchy of her to do that, but, like, all of her feelings and aggressions are aimed at Dean, and the editing is also aimed at, like, Dean's a shitty guy for doing this. I'm like, Dean's not a hero for doing this. I mean, he's a hero to me in that, like, in the span of 1 hour, he made out with two beautiful women. But, like, he's not a hero for the way that he handled the situation. But he's also not the villain here. I don't know that anyone is a quote-unquote villain. But I kind of come down on the side of, like, it's shittier on D-Lo's part than it is on his. Their date is also bought and paid for by Penny's. They go ATVing.
Why?
And only on one ATV. Like, so they have to be up close and personal to one another.
Oh, that sounds not fun.
It's barely shown. And then they park themselves by a water source. And Dean runs his hands through his hair a lot and looks very pensive. And Danielle goes, oh man, are you nervous? And Dean's like, oh, I'm always nervous. Like, I'm just a nervous guy. And she again asks, well, what's the deal with you and Christina? And he's like, well, you know, I like Christina a lot, but like I said, I'm here to explore other options as well. And then they make out.
Oh, of course. Naturally.
He comes right back from that date, and to his credit, his next move is, I gotta go find Christina.
Oh. Oh, no.
And he finds Christina, and she's like, well, how was the date? And he's like, I feel like you didn't want me to go on that date. She was like,
no shit, Dean.
Yeah, what gave you that impression? He's like, I want to let you know that it was nice, but it was pretty chaste. I did give her a kiss. I just want to be above board with you. I think really we need to be honest with one another. But as long as we're honest with one another, then you and I are good. Like, what we have can be good here and we can continue to grow it. Now, like, again, on paper, that is truthful. Like, they did kiss. Does Dean spin it like it was a peck? Yes. Is it like a full-on Frenching makeout session that he had with D-Lo? Yes.
Oh. Sounds unappetizing.
Well, it lulls Christina into, like, a sense of security. And then, and this is where the editing really kind of fucks Dean over, they go around to all of the other men, like Matt and Jack Stone and all of these guys, and they're like, I'm glad that it took going on this date with D-Lo for Dean to realize that he and Christina are actually something special. Sometimes that happens.
Is that what actually happened, though?
Well, no. But in the moment, they lead you to believe it, and they lead Christina to believe it, and you're sitting there as an audience being like, Dean's been redeemed. He went on the date, he kissed Danielle, he felt nothing, he came back, he realized that Christina and him are something genuine. And that's, if that's what it had been, right, what a hero's narrative that would have been for Dean.
Sure.
But instead, somewhere along the way, while he was on this date with D-Lo, she mentioned that her birthday is at Christmas. It's like December 28th. So it never really gets celebrated because everyone is celebrating Christmas or preparing to celebrate New Year's, and it gets lost in the fray.
Right.
And so Dean goes, well, that's why I love half birthdays. Like, you can celebrate your half birthday.
Your unbirthday, as it were.
And Dean, being the same guy who asked Rachel, what's your favorite dinosaur? You know, like, as a serious question during a date, you know that this kind of very boyish 26-year-old man means it from, the like, the best part of his heart.
Sure.
Like, yeah. Let's celebrate your half birthday. Someone in production pulls Dean aside after he has really set things right with Christina.
Oh, no. My spidey sense is going off.
And you can see the editing at work here. So you know that this did not come to Dean on of his own volition. Right. they pull him aside and they say, well, you know, Dean, today is actually Danielle's exact half birthday.
Hmm.
And wouldn't it be nice if you got her a cake? So, again, because they're cheap as shit and aren't paying for dates, they also get him, they get him a half of a watermelon cake. I did not know what a watermelon cake was.
Why only half of one?
Because it's a half birthday.
That's the dumbest shit I've ever heard.
Do you know what a watermelon cake is?
Yeah.
It's just watermelon frosted.
Yeah.
That's not a cake. That's an affront to cakes. Okay? I love cake. Frost a watermelon all you want. That is still a watermelon. That is a wolf in sheep's clothing.
You're so indignant about this.
Well, someone else on the beach, and I don't know who, because they're not really shown face on, goes, ew, this is not even real cake. And I'm like, yes. Everyone else on that beach is looking at Dean like, you're an idiot, and you're fucking things up for yourself. And that one guy, who might have been Jack Stone, is like, nah, this isn't cake, I don't want it, and walks away. And that's my spirit animal on this beach.
Oh, wow. We are all maybe Jack Stone, future porn star.
D'Lo is over the moon about that half-birthday cake. Christina goes and cries in a corner. And that is where we end the Monday night episode.
All right. Wow, that took forever.
Now, you would think that, logically speaking, that's also where you'd pick up tonight's episode. And they do for, like, all of 2 minutes. That 2 minutes is Matt sitting with Christina and saying, hey, are you okay? And she's like, no, not really.
Wait, who is?
Matt, like, the voice of reason from Rachel's season, who was the guy that if they hadn't been on television, she probably would have picked.
Okay.
The yes, one, that guy. Yes. The guy who's just, like, a genuinely, like, nice guy. He sees Christina is sad, and he thinks, okay, I can do two things here. One, I can comfort her, and two, I can make sure that she doesn't completely turn on Dean because he's my friend. And even in the ITMs, he's very admittant. He's like, Dean's an idiot. Like, what he has with Christina is, like, why we actually come to Paradise. Like, everyone here is saying, oh, I want a relationship. I want something real. What they have is real. I don't know what he's doing. Hopefully he's going to come to his senses. I got to talk to him. But I want to talk to Christina first to make sure that she wasn't completely imploding. Because if you've gone through the things that she's gone through in her life, you're probably inclined to put walls up when some guy is, like, getting a half-birthday cake for the other girl that's here in Paradise.
Yeah.
That narrative is then completely dropped and not picked up for the rest of the hour.
Huh.
We don't really see Christina again. We don't really see Dean again, except in the background of shots. And D'Lo is there and mostly shown because she's in a bathing suit, and it's a different bathing suit than the last day, and she is equally attractive in this bathing suit, so we are there.
Good.
She's there to remind us, like, oh yeah, D'Lo looks great in a bathing suit.
Fantastic.
I have Instagram to remind me of that, but you know, just in case I forgot, they're there. The rest of this hour is all about Raven again, so we're back to Raven.
Right.
Which is to say that in the wake of the rose ceremony and the stupid half-birthday celebration, Raven's feeling confident. She and Adam spent time together in Dallas during the 10-day break because, you know, again, 10-day break.
That's how they roll.
If I did shots, because that's the game that we like to talk about on this podcast. If I did shots every time someone said 10-day break, I could not do this podcast with you. Like, I would just be like, this is a paradise, man. This is a paradise. Because
we should definitely do an episode that's just that.
I mean, as we get deeper into the season, I would like to think that the 10-day break is less significant, but maybe. Maybe not. She's feeling pretty bullish that her and Adam have something real. And again, because these producers know what they're doing, just like they pulled D'Lo out of their hat, enter Sarah Vendel, who made very little impression on Nick's season to people not me, but Sarah was like on night one out of the limo for me. I was like, oh, that's the most attractive girl in this cast.
All right.
She's super pretty. She was a school teacher in Orange County. Had a very bubbly personality.
Gonna go track her down. See if she's on Tinder.
She's moved to Texas.
No, Wes. Yes. Are you crushed?
I'm not super crushed. Just because, I mean, Orange County is quite the trek from Los Angeles, among other things. That's, I feel like there's a lot of things that working closer against
than
us.
Texas, though.
Yes, it is closer than Texas, but. Presumably, she was scouting Dallas during the 10-day break because because she, too, was in Texas with Raven and Adam during the 10-day break.
Oh, what a interesting 10-day break.
And while the 10-day break was happening and Raven was really hitting it off with Adam in her mind, she went to sleep one night at the house that they were renting.
Wait, who did?
Raven went to sleep.
Okay.
During the
10-day break?
During the 10-day break. And she came downstairs in the morning to find Sarah and Adam cuddling and was very dismayed. So you have to understand that when Sarah walks through the doors of paradise, Raven's worried. Because she knows what has just happened. She has been fleeced.
Oh no.
Now she also had to know that this was going to happen because, and this is the other problem with the 10-day break, Sarah was sitting in a hotel room before the 10-day break, waiting to be released into paradise, and then flew back with them from Mexico, so they all knew that Sarah was there, even if they hadn't texted with one another in advance, and they also knew full well she was going back because they talked about it during the 10-day break in Dallas.
Well, the plot thickens.
But Raven does her best to try and convince Sarah that she should not take Adam on the date. Instead, she should take Ben, the erstwhile dog lover,
right,
who has no one to love him other than his dog.
He just needs a dog mom.
Again, editing fucks Ben in that he appears to have an entire conversation with Sarah in which all he talks about is his dog. And then I don't know what really elicited the stopping point in this conversation, but they cut to the point where Sarah goes, hey, I'm going to stop you here. So it's even more of an aggressive, dog edit than the one with Raven last week. Sarah, bubbly and wonderful person that she is, reveals in an ITM that she feels like every girl there is a used car salesman trying to pawn Ben off on her.
Oh, ouch.
Because they don't actually want him themselves. So she takes Adam out, and they go on a very lovely date that is, again, incredibly cheap. Unlike his date with Raven, they show a bit more of the date with Sarah, but it mostly appears to be them sitting at a table talking about how much they enjoy spending time with one another and how they enjoy cuddling during the 10-day break. Again, that narrative is then sort of dropped because they return from their date, and you would think there'd be some sort of conflict there. You're like, I'm sitting here going, okay.
I'm prepared.
Give me the conflict. Sarah and Raven are actually, really good friends in real life. It's not even like Christina and D'Lo where, we text and we know each other. Like, if you're all staying in a house during the 10-day break and you know that you've discussed with one another, oh, I like Adam, and then the other girl's like, oh, I like Adam.
Right.
Like, that's real tension. That's, conflict. Maybe it'll be picked up next week. Presumably it'll be picked up next week because Adam will have a rose and he's going to have to decide between the two of them who he's giving it to.
Oh, snap.
But we pivot at this point to a pretty boring end to the episode, which is that someone remembered that Lacey was on the show. And that she was whining a lot about how no one cared that she was on the show. So they handed her a date card. I don't care about Lacey. The other people in the house don't care about Lacey. The men don't care about Lacey. Lacey's very easy to not care about. But she gets
poor
this.
Lacey.
But her date card allows us to check in on Jorge.
Jorge,
the former bartender
who started his own.
Jorge's Torques.
So bad.
for his first Torque.
I'm dead.
He takes Lacey and her chosen man, Diggy, to the place where he was conceived.
Wait. What?
They ride horses through a jungle.
What?
Another date that probably costs nothing, but allows us to land on a very...
Jorge is really appreciating this startup seed money.
Yes. Yeah, well, that's why I'm okay with this date. They then arrive on a scenic beach, and Lacey goes, oh, well, how did you find out about this beach? And Jorge goes, oh, my mother told me this is where I was conceived.
What? What random-ass nonsense.
Jorge then decides he's going to share the date with them until Diggy asks him politely to leave, because it's making him uncomfortable that Jorge is just sitting in the sand next to them during the date.
Oh, this sounds so awkward and staged.
Yes. Now, Jorge is just off camera for the rest of the date. We see the two of them frolicking on the beach. We see some, like, love forming. I put love in quotation marks because it's not real love at all. But we then see Jorge straight run past the camera, double thumbs up.
Okay. I'm with Jorge.
And the thing about that date is, it's very dumb, but it fulfills all the things I say I want from a date in paradise.
Right, it sounds like fun and silly.
It's silly, but it's using the scenic values of where you are in Mexico mm-hmm. to your benefit, and, like, you know that you're not taking it that seriously, but there also is a romantic quality to it, because when, you know, Diggy and Lacey are, like, making out in the ocean there, I'm like, yeah, I buy that. Like, I don't really buy that Diggy's that interested in her, but I do buy that, like, if you had a substantially attractive woman in front of you and she wasn't whining in that moment, which is mostly what Lacey does, that, like, that you're like, all right, yeah, I'll make out with you in the ocean here, and it's, like, nice, and we're conjuring fake feelings. Now, as soon as Lacey is like, man, these producers care about me, and Diggy has feelings for me, they're like, psych, Lacey, you're only here for one reason, you're cannon fodder. Let's go. And they roll in Dominique. Now, you can ask me the obligatory, who is Dominique?
Yeah.
And my answer is, I have no fucking idea. This girl walked through the door of paradise, and one, Chris Harrison didn't even bother to meet her.
Does he normally greet the
new arrivals? He greets new arrivals that they care about. So, like...
Oh, wow, that's... Okay.
So, he doesn't greet Adam because it's the middle of the night, and Chris doesn't work in the middle of the night.
No.
But they needed him to arrive in the middle of the night in order to create the tension prior to the rose ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
He greets Sarah Vendel. Like, he's there to be like, Sarah, I'm so excited to see you. Like, you're important to our narrative here because you're gonna fuck shit up for Raven. Dominique just sort of, like, walks down the stairs. And the only person really excited to see her is Taylor, who, like, separates herself from, like, having sex with Derek to be like, oh my god, my best friend is here. And again, she probably knew that Dominique was coming, but with girls who made no impression on their respective seasons, they're usually unleashed at the very end of Paradise to just sort of be like, okay, here you go. Like, there's one day left, you're not gonna find love, but we need to keep the body count up.
Right.
So for Dominique to be there this early, it's like, mind blown. I guess she was on Nick's season. A Google search tells me that she, like, went home night one, so...
But apparently has found friendship and hoping to find more love.
Yes, hoping to find love. And apparently, Lacey and Taylor really don't like each other, which feels like the kind of thing that we should have been seeding for the previous six-plus hours.
Were they on the same season?
Yes.
So then, okay, they just don't like each other.
I guess what that means is that Lacey's probably Team Corinne in the Corinne-Taylor debate that persisted throughout that season.
Wait, is Taylor the one who was...
The emotional IQ.
Okay, yeah.
And Taylor quickly says to Dominique, you should ask Diggy out on this date. And Lacey is like, fuck you, bitch. I just went on a date with Diggy. We were with Jorge's Torgues, and it was real love.
We have a connection.
All of the other women pretend like they care about Lacey. And that's the best way I can put it, because they pretty much just want her to stop whining.
Aww.
But Dominique takes the heads up from her friend and goes, yeah, I'm going to take Diggy out on this date.
Well, all right. Was there a meltdown because of this?
Yes. Lacey stomps around, cries, says no one cares about her emotions. She's maybe going to quit the show now. No, she's not. Lacey, you can't afford to quit this show. Like, this show's the only thing keeping you socially relevant to get, like, flat tummy tea deals. and Sugar Bear hair contracts. So, like, you didn't stick around long enough on Nick Season to get those deals. You need to be on Paradise for more than two episodes to get them. So she huffs and puffs and doesn't blow anyone's house down. The date itself between Dominique and Diggy is entirely uneventful and somehow the cheapest date of the week, which feels impressive because margaritas at a restaurant, pretty cheap. An obscure dinner date, pretty cheap. The ATVing, I guess there's some money to that. Jorge's Torgues, you know the real money. Real money went into that.
He's being paid an exposure, Wes.
This date is, let's give them whipped cream and strawberries and put them in an obscure room in the middle of nowhere, and that's the date.
That's not a date.
No. That's like something that you do before you have sex, like when you're kind of like just hooking up with somebody. Which again, you could do that at the Paradise like resort. You don't need to go anywhere to do that. They may have done something beyond this that they don't show, but really all we get from the date is Diggy feeding her a strawberry and then being like, now I'm jealous of the strawberry. I want my mouth to go where the strawberry went.
Oh, no. Oh, what a terrible thing to say.
And Dominique's like, you're such a bad boy. And then they make out.
God. I hide my face in shame. The human race.
And Diggy is like, yeah, I feel more here than I did with Lacey. I'm like, yeah, of course you did. Like, because, like, you guys are eating each other's faces and having, like, sexual strawberries, whereas, like, you had Jorge standing over your date babysitting.
At the place where Jorge was conceived.
Yes. And then to just double down on, like, how weirdly the whole hour that was tonight prior to the sit-down section with Chris in studio was thrown together haphazardly. Mm-hmm. It ends with Danielle Maltby, so not D-Lo, but like lovely angelic Disney princess Danielle, who, as I mentioned last week, is 31 and probably like not over the hill in terms of, like, that's the wrong way to describe it, just sort of like over the hill for finding love on this franchise. Like, as a 31-year-old woman, unless you're the bachelorette, like, Rachel, you're probably not going to try to fuck with, like, 26-year-old Dean and his shenanigans.
No, not at all.
Or, like, Benzie and his dog. Or Robbie and his, like, insta-famous
influencer
career. So, like, she's intermittently throughout these first 7 hours or whatever said, I really like Wells, who they dragged back to bartend the season, but
who
told
Wells
was the all-around good guy from JoJo's season of The Bachelorette. He's a radio talk show personality in Nashville.
Okay.
He competed last season on Paradise. This year they told him, like, we're going to bring you back to bartend, and I think I mentioned last week, they actually had him bartending and doing dishes, and
yeah,
you can't date anybody. He and Danielle have a history in Nashville. They both live in Nashville, and they went on a date 4 years ago. The date never materialized into anything. They became really good friends. Sitting there in Paradise with no one to make out with, and the age discrepancy between her and all the other women staring her in the face, mm-hmm. because it's like a 5-year age difference between her and the next, you know, oldest woman. She's hit with the startling revelation that, like, hey, Wells is super cute and 33 and lives in the same city that I do and has a stable job. Like, how did I not piece these things together in real life? But the show is like, yeah, but you can't date Wells because he's the bartender.
Right.
And she's like, well, I kind of want to date Wells. And they're like, yeah, but you can't date Wells because he's the bartender. And she's like, okay, well, during the 10-day break, I'm like, here we go again.
Oh, the 10-day break.
Please tell me that you and Wells had sex during the 10-day break. Please tell me that you and Wells had sex during the 10-day break. And she's like, no, during the 10-day break, I got an offer to go to Kenya, and she's a neonatal nurse, and help kids at a hospital there.
Right.
And if I can't date Wells, I think I'm just going to go do that.
Okay.
Because there are no guys here that really are worthy of my time or attention, and I came here to find love, but I don't really see that in my future, so I'm just going to go build the Wells. And then when I'm done done building Wells and working in the hospitals and doing whatever I'm doing in Kenya, I'll go back to Nashville, the same city that Wells lives in, and he'll be done.
And look Wells up.
And he'll be done filming this, and we'll still have each other's phone numbers, and so that's good for me.
Okay. It's a good plan. Solid.
On her way out the door, Wells is like, hey, can I walk you to the car?
Oh, I know what that goes for.
And when they get to the car...
That's when you want a neck and your parents are in the house.
There you go. When they walk to the car, Wells takes her by surprise.
Uh-huh. Sure.
Or at least she says that, which I'm like, you're a 30-plus-year-old woman. You know that this, when he's walking you to the car, he's going to kiss you because someone told him, hey, Wells, you're the bartender. But also, she's leaving, so you can kiss her now.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're not going to worry about her trying to pair her with another guy.
This is an appropriately dramatic exit.
And they have a lot of the kisses on the show are not, like... Well, they're kind of, like, gross. They're not kisses where I'm like, oh, that's a sexy kiss. You know, like, I talked a lot during The Bachelorette about Brian and Rachel and him just,
oh, yeah. Unhinging like, his jaw.
Yeah, baby birding her. The Wells and Danielle kiss is, like, a very romantic and wonderful kiss. And you're like, oh, you guys, I have more faith in you as a couple than any of the real couples on this show. You just seem like two grown-ass fucking people that, like, could date one another and live in the same city.
Sure.
And living in the same city is, like, a big thing.
Have they?
Yeah, they live...
No, I mean, have they toward dating?
Oh, I honestly... Well, Wells did a podcast last week, and he said on it that he was single, but then he also said, but keep your eye out for next week on Paradise, because things change. So I don't know how much contractually he's, like, dancing around what he can and can't say. There's definitely been a fair number of photos of them together in Nashville that, like, have been on their respective social media pages, but they were also friends before this, and they live in Nashville.
Can't really read into it.
So, you know, there's only so much you can guess from that. So that's the end of the episode. Like, they kiss, and then it just cuts to Chris in studio.
And it's a terrible Demarius.
Yeah, Demario and whatever. Like, that is a very oddly edited hour of television, because it doesn't ramp tensions up at all. Like, they ramp the tension up with Sarah, Raven, and Adam to then just do nothing with it. They sort of ramp the tension up with Danielle and Wells for Danielle to leave. And they ramped attention up with Lacey, Dominique, and Diggy to really only explore that in so much as, like, Lacey is whiny and we don't really care about her. And they don't touch the Dean thing that they spent all of last night on at all. So...
That's weird. And also, do you want to leave it on that note? Like, of somebody leaving?
Yeah, I don't really get it. It doesn't feel like it's not the end of the night. That's the reality, too. So, like, we're going to come back next Monday night at 8 and pick up that night after Danielle's left, which, again, speaks to how strangely it's done. It's just a very bizarre thing, and I find, like, so much of what we talk about on this is me harping on editing, but...
It's important.
Yeah, it's so relevant to what the show is, and so it's a very weird way to go out. I don't really know what next week is. I would venture to guess that with the way things have been going... It'll be an hour on Monday leading up to the next rose ceremony, and then the next rose ceremony, and then the fallout from that, and then I don't know what the first hour really is on Tuesday night, and then the second hour is Corinne. And I really, if Corinne is a full hour, that's going to be, like, too much Corinne. Like, Demario got 30 minutes, and that felt about right. So... Who knows what the half hour prior to Demario will be? They filmed it the same day. That's the other thing, too.
Oh.
It was the thing that I told you was filming from, like, 11 a.m. to, like, 7 p.m. They just knocked all of this in-studio stuff out at once, which is lazy and not particularly timely. But I guess you only have so much money to throw around to fly these people in. I can't imagine a plane ticket's that expensive, but we don't have money for dates in Paradise, so so maybe we don't have money for plane tickets either. Either way, I'll be curious to see who they're rolling in and out next, because at this point now with Dominique, like, we're kind of scraping the bottom of the barrel. The only familiar faces I'm really still looking forward to seeing between now and the end of the season who aren't already in the resort are Tickle Monster, who I...
Oh, no.
Who I can't really imagine being there for long. Like, I just... But I kind of think the Tickle Monster could be fun in Paradise. And then the twins, who I still wholeheartedly believe is a bait and switch. Like, they're going to keep telling me, like, Haley and Emily are coming. And they're going to be there for, like, 17 minutes and probably won't go on a single date. Just because that feels, like, that feels right for them.
For the show or for the twins?
It feels like that's right for the twins. I feel like if you have the twins and they're willing to do Paradise, like, if they're willing to be there, you have them on night one. But if they're not really willing to be there, then you drop them in to shake things up for 17 minutes of an episode. They collect their checks and their first-class airfare to Mexico, and then they go home. I look forward to be proving wrong, because if I am, that means that there's more twins, and I watched 10 hours of their reality show, so...
Oh. All I remember is the little yippy dogs and them pooping on the floor all the time.
Yeah.
Oh, and they blurred out the poop for some reason, as if that would be offensive to people.
Well, just because there was no poop. That's really what it comes down to. They blurred it out to make you believe that there was poop because it was cheaper than getting fake dog poop.
How stupid.
Yeah. That show is spectacularly dumb, but that's also why there is no podcast about that. I could have written... Originally, I thought I was going to write episodic recaps, and then no one wanted to hire me to do that. And they're probably right in that the assumption that the show wasn't enough to write recaps about. Like, having now watched it back, I'm like, there was not much there. But that's about it this week.
That was so long.
Well, it was about average for us.
So long.
I think... Again, 4 hours, we're bringing this in at one, so we're sticking to what we were at The Bachelorette, you know, which makes me wonder, can I bring The Bachelorette or next season The Bachelor in at shorter amounts of time, which is the challenge here.
Well, it's good to set goals for yourself, yes.
We did get confirmation that Bachelor Winter Games will take place in Vermont this week. I don't know if that will be airing at the same time as The Bachelor, but we may be doing double doses of this podcast at that point.
I don't know if I can do that for my own mental health.
We'll let everyone here know. I'm sure that they would love double doses of this in a way.
Yeah, or we may be down to 4 listeners instead of 5. I like, we actually actively shed one.
No, I like to believe that this is... I got my first at reply from somebody I didn't know who listens to this.
Wait, seriously?
Yes. Yes, telling me that they really agree with my sentiments last week. And that was a real high water mark for me.
Oh.
So, speaking of that, that's my wonderful segue.
Looking forward to the first app fight I get agreeing with my sentiments, which is reality TV is awful.
You can do that by replying me at I'm Wesley.
And I am at Alexa.
Until next week, our intro theme is Biking in the Park by Lee Rosevere.
Yep.
And our outro theme is Already There by Lee Woodward.
Josh Woodward.
Our outro theme is...
You went through God damn it!
Is Already There by Josh Woodward.